From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It has been a big weekend for sports in the United States and around the world. In the U.S., millions are still riding high off Bad Bunny at the Super Bowl, but the halftime performance by the Puerto Rican superstar also drew backlash from President Trump and other conservatives and sparked a counter halftime show by Turning Point USA, headlined by Kid Rock. Going abroad to the Olympics, criticism has been growing about the reported deployment of ICE agents for security, and U.S. athletes have not been quiet. Figure skater Amber Glenn, who identifies as pansexual, spoke about the LGBTQ plus community and others fighting for their rights during the Trump administration.
I hope I can use my platform and my voice throughout these games to try and encourage people to stay strong in these hard times. A lot of people say, you're just an athlete, like stick to your job, shut up about politics, but politics affect us all. It is something that I will not just be quiet about.
And skiers Chris Lillis and Hunter Hess talked about having mixed feelings representing the United States.
I feel heartbroken about what's happened in the United States when, I'm pretty sure you're referencing ICE and some of the protests and things like that. I think that as a country, we need to focus on respecting everybody's rights and making sure that we're treating our citizens as well as anybody with love and respect.
It brings up mixed emotions to represent the U.S. right now, I think. It's a little hard. There's obviously a lot going on that I'm not the biggest fan of, and I think a lot of people aren't. If it aligns with my moral values, I feel like I'm representing it. Just because I'm wearing the flag doesn't mean I represent everything that's going on in the U.S.
And these comments were also criticized by President Trump, who called Hess a, quote, loser for his comments. But activism has long been part of sports. Remember 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick taking a knee in 2016?
I mean, ultimately, it's to bring awareness and make people, you know, realize what's really going on in this country. There are a lot of things that are going on that are unjust. People aren't being held accountable for. And that's something that needs to change. That's something that, you know, this country stands for freedom, liberty, justice for all. And it's not happening for all right now.
And even going back decades, the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City, where U.S. athletes Tommy Smith and John Carlos each raised a black gloved fist during a medal ceremony.
I can say I represented black America. I'm very proud to be a black man, as I said earlier, and also to have won a gold medal. And this, I thought, that I could represent my people by letting them know that I'm proud to be a black man.
Joining us now to talk about the historical ties between politics and sports is Lou Matz, a professor of philosophy at University of the Pacific. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Vicky. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for taking the time. Well, let's learn a little bit about your background. How did you get involved with philosophy of sports and politics?
So for over a decade, I've been teaching a philosophy of sport course at the University of Pacific, and it's really a course focused on all kinds of ethical issues in sport. And one of the segments beginning in 2016 had been on athlete political protest. And that gained more currency because then the next semester, that's when Colin Kaepernick knelt during the national anthem in protest of the murders of African-Americans at the hands of the police. And so then I just developed more of the content and eventually published an article titled Why Player Political Protest Must Be a Part of U.S. Professional Sport.
You know, aside from it just being a large audience to reach out to communicate that message, why are sports a common or popular place for activism?
I think one of the things is our history is different here in the United States because of the history of slavery and segregation. And because of the popularity of sport, and I think sports have appealed historically to the working class, baseball and football and basketball and boxing. I think that gives sports a kind of visibility it doesn't quite have in other countries.
Mm. Yeah, and also the sheer visibility as well of it. It is said often by some people about keeping politics out of sports. But when you do your research, how are things just more complicated than that simple, straightforward statement?
Yeah, I call that a platitude that sports and politics don't mix, but it's both been historically untrue, as a matter of historical fact, and even as a normative claim that sport politics ought to be kept out of sport, that just is not feasible as well. So for example, historically, in 1912, Congress passed the Sims Act that prevented the interstate transportation of fight films. Well, why was that? Well, because Jack Johnson, the first great black heavyweight champion, had beat Jim Jeffries in what was called the fight of the century. It actually took place in Reno. And Congress didn't want white America seeing a black man beat a white man. You also had the Major League Baseball and the NFL had a period where blacks were not allowed to play. In football, the NFL was from 1933 to 1945. And then 1946, Kenny Washington broke that barrier in Major League Baseball. Most viewers would know that it was Jackie Robinson in 1947. So there you have, you know, politics preventing a certain group from playing a professional sport. And it's also the case that particularly after the World War, World War II, and the development of technology, you had the national anthem played regularly at sporting events, and flying of the American flag and the military displays. So those are all political symbols because they represent no institution in civil society, not private life, but they represent a sovereign state, and that's a nation. And so that's politics. I just want to add one other thing. Viewers might not appreciate the fact that the sporting associations, the NFL, the NBA, WNBA, Major League Baseball, that they are political associations in the sense that they have the powers of to regulate, to adjudicate, and to enforce their rules and codes of conduct. So that is political by its very nature.
Getting into a lot of things that have happened this weekend and just in the past week or so, I mean, of course, we have the Super Bowl and the Olympics, but kicking off with the Super Bowl, would you consider Bad Bunny's halftime show political?
You know, actually, I listened to the segment on the way up here, the NPR segment, just about the symbolism in there, the plantations, some of the history of colonialism that was portrayed during the halftime show. I think that was intentional. But there was a whole mix of all kinds of cultural elements. And so I think it was much broader than any simple political statement.
Yeah, there were so many themes. I mean, as you mentioned, from sugarcane fields, power outages, I mean, having an unreliable grid, Ricky Martin, you know, singing in Spanish, like what happened to Hawaii, don't have this happen to Puerto Rico, over tourism, taking away public land, a lot of themes of gentrification. But it wasn't just Bad Bunny. I mean, Green Day kicked things off, and they have been vocal critics of the Trump administration. You also have Brandi Carlile, who is gay, who sang America the Beautiful, and she told Variety ahead of the Super Bowl that queer representation mattered in this current political moment. You mentioned that these institutions, you know, who chooses the powers that be, who get to perform at the Super Bowl, they have a lot of power, and their choices are also sending a message. So what does the selection of these artists say about the moment and the political times that we're in?
Well, one of the things to point out about the Olympics that changed in 2021 in Tokyo is in 1975, the IOC established, it was then Rule 55, and they changed it to Rule 50 to make it a total neutral zone anywhere in the Olympic venue. So athletes were prohibited from, and anybody else associated with the Olympics were prohibited from any demonstrations or any religious, political, and racial propaganda. After the George Floyd murder, and after a bunch of global events in sport, the athletes pretty much agitated for a change. And so the IOC loosened that up. And it's now Rule 50.2. And it allows, during media events, during interviews, anywhere but the podiums and during the opening and closing games and actually during competition, it allows now athletes to express their points of view. That's a big change. And so I think that's why you've seen artists and athletes at the venue exercising their right to express their dissent. It can't be towards any particular person or any particular country. And I think the athletes have framed it that way. It's been more general.
Mm. Well, is there a difference between an individual athlete taking a stand and sending a message compared to a team or even a league?
Yeah, at least my understanding with professional sports, that each of the sports associations has their own player code of conduct. So that the and usually that has been negotiated with the player unions. But so there is variation in Major League Baseball, say, in NFL and NBA and WNBA about what players are allowed to say while on the job. And then teams also have autonomy within, I think, their bylaws to make statements as well. So you're going to have some variation depending on the sport and depending on the owners.
Even leading up to the opening ceremony at the Olympics, the U.S. Olympic Hospitality House for the Winter Games in Milan, they renamed from the Ice House to the Winter House, and they did this in the days leading up to the Olympics, and it's because of the negative connotations that are associated for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. What stands out to you about that, and kind of in the context of the moment now, because sports and politics goes back generations and decades?
Well, I think that the critics who say keep politics out of sport, I think that has been used as a way to shield legitimate criticism of denial of basic human rights, which, of course, exists in our Constitution, the rights to liberty and equality and due process, as well as in the UN Charter and the UN Declaration of Human Rights. I think the athletes are really just calling attention to that. I find that the blame's being displaced. I think the athletes are the ones that are holding up the American ideals of liberty and equality and due process. And the current administration has been the one to undermine those and trash those and not represent them. And I think the athletes are representing them with their statements about renaming, you know, that venue, or just in their statements about their discontent with some of the things going on in the country.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with University of the Pacific professor Lou Matz about the long history of politics, protests, and sports. When you take a look back at history, what displays of protest, activism, and politics really stand out to you? I mean, I mentioned the 1968 Mexico City Games with the Black Glove Fists. I also think of Muhammad Ali. I also think of boycotts between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. I mean, there's a lot. What bubbles up to the top for you that you want people to be reminded of?
Well, the rule that I just mentioned in 1975, the IOC Rule 50, that was precipitated by what happened in Mexico City, and specifically with Tommy Smith and Juan Carlos on the podium. So that's why there has been prohibition of any protests while on the podium. That was, you know, understandably one of the most iconic athlete dissent moments in U.S. and probably international history. But, you know, going back there, all the way back to Jim Thorpe in the early part of the century, where he won the pentathlon and the decathlon in the 1912 games in Stockholm, it was a political statement about the equality of Native Americans, because Jim Thorpe was part Sac Fox and another Native American tribe. You had Paul Robeson, Rutgers football player, and became a singer. He was one of the first outspoken African Americans, so-called part of the heritage. Howard Bryant's written about that history. He ended up having his visa revoked when he was in Europe, but he was very outspoken. I think Jesse Owens in the 1936 Berlin Games, again, became just by his presence and by his victory, it was a statement about against white supremacy, both in Germany, of course, against the Third Reich, but also in the United States. You had Althea Gibson win Wimbledon in the 50s, the first African-American to win an international tennis event. And so there's just been a long history of athletes, either intentionally or just by their competitive success, have made political statements.
And protests go both ways, of course. I mean, in response to the halftime show, Turning Point USA, which is a conservative activist organization, they had a counter halftime show. And you had President Trump chime in, who did not like the halftime show or Green Day at all. And he took to, you know, social media to express that. But even in recent years, I mean, there have been NHL players refusing to participate in Pride Night or wear Pride themes. Jerseys. Star 49ers defensive end Nick Bosa was fined by the NFL for wearing a pro-Trump hat during a post-game interview. So it goes in multiple directions, activism.
It does. And I think it's often selective. So the claim that athletes should just shut up and play, shut up and ski, stay in their lane, you know, critics often don't point out other kinds of displays that are objectionable, like when athletes express their religious beliefs, or when, you know, the sporting associations have overt political displays of militarism or nationalism. You don't often hear the critics complaining about those displays. They focus on the beliefs that they really don't like.
Finally, what keeps you so fascinated with this topic and this study? I mean, it seems like, I mean, obviously you can go down in history more than a century, and you have so many examples that you just laid out for us. But when looking ahead to the future, what interests you on this topic of politics and sports?
I think the topic's never going to go away, because sport is an institution of civil society within the political realm. It has so much visibility. There's so many powerful narratives of athletes based on race or gender or sexual orientation. I do believe our country is, despite its ebbs and flows, there is this progress towards full inclusion, full equality, and the moral recognition of a common humanity. And I see sports as being a primary venue in which that battle of full recognition, full moral equality is fought and contested.
Professor Matz, thank you.
Vicki, my pleasure. It was really fun.
Lou Matz is a professor of philosophy at the University of the Pacific, and we've been talking about the long history of politics, protest, activism, and sports. Up next, President Trump's crackdown on certain immigrants who drive big rigs is having an impact on California's trucking industry, especially within the Sikh community. We'll learn how the loss of work is impacting the broader economy. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.